Okay. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the new year. The music always throws me off when it acts crazy. This is Liberty Unbridled. It is Sunday night. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. I hope everyone had a good holiday. I hope everyone had a safe and enjoyable new year. I hope those that tuned in last week enjoyed the best of show that we've put together. I wanted to take some time off and be with the family, and I don't know about you all, but it's been hectic around my place, lots of work, lots of family stuff going on, and quite honestly, I just needed a little bit of a break. So I apologize for not being here live last week, but I appreciate you all tuning in this week, and I appreciate that you guys had the patience to deal with me being gone for a week. So to begin, like we always begin, I want to start with the political rhetoric generator because it always generates us some interesting political rhetoric, and this week is no different. This week's randomly generated political rhetoric is, I will work for an America where smelly hippies and racists can't undermine our fast food chains. Always got to love the political rhetoric generator. It's always, always kind of interesting to see what it comes up with. So some interesting things since we last met in live and in person here. There was a poll that came out that showed that people believe that the U.S., the United States, is the biggest threat to world peace in 2013, that we were the biggest threat. And I think that was kind of an interesting thing. The rest of the country, or rest of the world, rather, believed that the United States was the greatest threat to international peace. And all the while, another poll came out, actually this has been a couple weeks ago, that the majority of Americans believe that big government is the biggest threat out there, that big government is the problem. And there's been a handful of studies done that show that kind of thing, but basically Gallup has done this poll for a while now, and there it is. In 1965, 35% of those who were surveyed said that big government was the biggest threat. And in this survey, 72%, almost three-quarters of Americans polled, said that big government is a bigger threat than big business or big labor. And I think that's an interesting thing, that more and more people are starting to get it. They're starting to get it, that the truest threat to our individual liberty is our government. And I think that's a good thing that people are finally waking up to that fact that, well, and I don't know if people have connected the dots yet or not, but, you know, of those three things, big business and big labor, they use big government to take away your rights. So really, in a way, it's when those three things work together that things are the worst. And I guess that would make sense since those are the quote-unquote boogeymen that are being polled. But it is often that big business and big labor work with big government to take your rights away for their own special interests. And it's been that way for quite some time. Speaking of big government, ding dong, the witch is dead. Michael Bloomberg is no longer in office in New York City. And there were a couple of funny things I saw. Reason Magazine put together a montage of Bloomberg's greatest hits, of all the silly things he had banned and all the ridiculous nanny state garbage he had pushed. And on his very last day, on the way out the door, Bloomberg banned e-cigarettes, the electronic cigarettes that harm absolutely no one and are an alternative to smoking. And, of course, the e-cigarettes are always banned under the auspice of, well, they look too much like cigarettes. Ridiculous. The reality is e-cigarettes, if it's supposed to be a matter of public health, right, and those around, e-cigarettes pose no harm to those who are in the same room or whatever. Absolutely no harm. And the reality is e-cigarettes truly expose the nannies and what their real grind is. Their real grind is they just don't like smoking. It has nothing to do with health. It has nothing to do with anything else. And because this looks like smoking, it offends them and therefore must be banned. And, you know, that I think is kind of to the point, is that if we were to go about trying to ban everything that offended someone else, we wouldn't be allowed to do anything. There are a lot of people pushing for a lot of bans, and we're going to get to some of the things proposed in Kentucky this year, or will be proposed in Kentucky this year, that someone disagrees with, and therefore they want it illegal. It doesn't harm anyone else. You know, nobody's involuntarily being exposed. But they are offended. And because they're offended, it needs to go away. And that's my problem with all these banners, these bans in general, are the science behind them is an excuse. The rationales behind them are an excuse. The reality is that the people who are most ardently for these bans of any activity are offended by the activity itself. They're not harmed by it directly. They're not forced to participate. They're offended by it. And I think that that's a horrible reason to ban anything. Just because you don't like something doesn't mean the world has to revolve around you. Just because you want to do something doesn't mean you have a right to it. There are individual rights. You as an individual can do whatever you like so long as it does not forcibly interfere with someone else. In other words, you can't force someone to also participate in what you want to do. And likewise, others have the right to do what they want as long as they don't force you to participate. And when it comes down to it, if there are two people occupying the same space that have a conflicting view of what's right and what's wrong, the first layer of arbitration in that, the person who decides, if the two people cannot decide on their own, is the property owner. The property owner, and that's where property rights comes in. The property owner has the right to decide on their property which activity is cool and not cool. It can be something as silly as the TV volume is too loud or too soft, or the jukebox, or whatever. It can be something more onerous, like, you know, what type of people they like in the establishment. It can be something more contentious, like a smoking policy. And yeah, we'll get to that in a moment. They're back, of course, here in Kentucky. Those band nannies never go away. But what is interesting is that the majority of the public, the majority of America, is turning against these bans, this overregulation of individual behavior. The majority of Americans are realizing that big government is the enemy, taking away individual choices. It's spying on us, treating us as if we're guilty, collecting all the information on us, all of our private information, our public information, aggregating it together into metadata. Well, I think I have that slide in my deck this time, but I saw a really good slide on exactly what does metadata say about someone. And it was one of the, you know, his examples of what metadata could say about someone. And it's like, you know, metadata says that you made a phone call from the Brooklyn Bridge to a suicide hotline and were on the phone for 45 minutes. But it doesn't release the contents of what was inside that conversation. You don't know what was said, but it shows that you were on the bridge for 45 minutes with a suicide hotline. Right? Well, what does that say? Right? The point is that metadata say a lot, And people are starting to figure this out. They know, and some folks are starting to make a bigger deal out of it. You know, Rand Paul has been on the record now talking about the NSA chief, you know, should face some sort of repercussions or sanctions for lying to Congress. I agree. The American public deserve to know what is being done in their name. And I understand their security concerns. But one of the downsides of living in a free society is that in a free society, you have the option, or not you have the option, but we have the ability to be free. We have the ability to not be commanded. And in a free society, we have the right to determine our leadership. And the only way to determine that leadership effectively is if we know what that leadership is doing in our name. We cannot have a government that is so out of control that we don't know what it's doing in our name. And we cannot accept the excuse that it is being done to keep us safe from the boogeyman, even if that boogeyman is real. We cannot accept the reasoning that if our government wasn't keeping us in the dark, that we'd be in more danger. The greatest danger we have is exactly what that survey said. The greatest danger we have is big government. A government that is not responsive to the people, a government that does what it believes is best, but is not listening to the public it purports to represent. How can you have a government that is not truthful with the American public, specifically lies about certain things, and also lies through omission about others? How can we, the electorate, decide whether or not we like what that government is doing? How can we, as the electorate, change that government if we don't even know that it needs to be changed? Now, I would argue that any government that operates on that level that, oh, well, we're not telling you for your own good what we're doing, I would argue that that government needs to be changed right there and then because of that. Oh, don't worry, buddy. We got you covered, man. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Trust me. Anyone, implicitly. I do give people the benefit of the doubt to a certain extent. But when it comes to matters of my government telling me, don't worry about it, we're doing the right things, just keep electing us. Well, yeah, there's lots of politicians that'll tell me that. Lots of politicians have said, oh, I'm doing a great job for you, don't worry about it. I'm sure if you asked Richie Farmer when he was Commissioner of Agriculture, if he was doing a good job, he'd say, oh, yeah, I'm doing a great job for the taxpayers of Kentucky. Just keep putting me back. Doing you a great job. I'm sure that's what he would have said. And now we come to find out, after years, that he was less than honest. In fact, he was doing some pretty bad stuff. And I assume everybody has heard this story that, you know, the federal prosecutor is looking to put him away for a couple years, specifically because he abused the public trust. But I think that he should be held accountable for his crimes no matter what. I don't care if he's a basketball star or not. I don't believe in giving special treatment to people just because they're a star or a celebrity. Of course not. People that live in countries with dictators yet, they get the unequal treatment. And the people of a higher class, you can't see me over here, I'm adjusting my monocle, you know, I am of a higher class. The people of a higher class get special treatment. We as a country, well, we fought a war. I know it wasn't just about that, but that was a piece of it. And there was certainly a constitutional amendment that was supposed to guarantee that all American citizens are equal. We shouldn't have classes. Richie Farmer should not get special treatment. He never could have. Just because you can bounce a basketball does not mean you get special treatment. And in fact, it's that special treatment that I believe, personally, I think that's what ruined Richie Farmer. I think he grew up with an entitlement mentality because everybody thought he was the greatest thing since sliced bread because he could put a ball through the hoop. I blame his upbringing more than anything. But you still can't let him get away with what happened. And we have to hold our government accountable for those actions. Our elected officials accountable for those actions. Things slide in a vacuum. Just because, well, he meant well. Or I hear this about Farmer at times. He didn't know any better. That's a horrible reason. A horrible reason to try to give him the pass. He didn't know any better. He's an adult. He's buying stuff with taxpayer dollars and handing it out to his friends or just selling it. You can't tell me they didn't know any better. Now, that's not to say he's the only one who's ever done such a thing, too. And that's, I think, what would be interesting is to keep digging and see how many other folks have done this in the past as well. Because make no mistake, Kentucky's government is not clean as a whistle. And it's not just Richie Farmer. I had this discussion numerous times this week with different people around the state. It's always interesting to me, I roll as state chairman of the Libertarian Party of Kentucky. I talk to people of all different, what I would call political maturity. And what I mean by political maturity, it's not meant to be dissuading or derogatory. But a lot of people really believe the government is working in our favor or has been working in our favor until recently, right? Which is when they come out and start seeking out the Libertarian Party because with their party and they won't be if they're a Democrat, well, they can't be a Republican, so they come look for us. Or if they're a Republican, well, they can't be a Democrat, so they come look for us. These are the folks that are relatively politically naive. They don't really understand what's going on. They know something's wrong. Awesome. I'm glad that they figured out that something's wrong. I'm hoping more people do. But it's interesting to watch these folks develop over time and that moment in time where they realize that their county, their own county, corrupt to the core, that there's been special deals and backroom things going on that we're not on the up and up. No bid contracts being given out to such as brother-in-law or whatever. This happens. It happens all over Kentucky. Some counties, they're so brazenly cavalier about it that eventually the feds come in and bust them. And that's another thing you see for 2 to 3 years is the FBI will come in and bust some judge exec, some sheriff, or within some county over in eastern Kentucky. Because they're just so brazen about it, they just do it. They don't care. It's sad. And the only way that it stops is with us, who are more politically mature, those of us that understand what's really going on. Now, I can tell you, in every county, how the power structure works. I assume you want to know this. In every county, there is an establishment. The establishment of the county is a handful of politicians, usually the biggest law firm in town, and usually the largest employer in town. And the three groups work together to funnel money in a circle to make sure that the little cabal that the establishment persists. So a business, through its employees or otherwise, works to get someone elected. The folks that get elected appoint the bureaucracy. The bureaucracy works to specifically work to benefit those political donors. And then those political donors, in turn, donate again to the political people who put the bureaucracy in place to perpetuate this cycle. And the attorneys are there just to make sure if anybody starts getting caught on the carpet, the attorneys jump in to defend the bureaucracy, to defend the establishment, to try to scare off any would-be people who start to question what's going on. And this pattern is everywhere, everywhere. I've seen it in big counties. I've seen it in small counties. It's everywhere. That's how our governments work in the state. And once you realize that, once you figure out who the big employer or employers of the two or three power players are, the law firm, every once in a while it's a couple of law firms. It's usually one, but sometimes two. Once you figure out who those lawyers are, once you figure out who those employers are, and once you figure out who those elected officials are, you know who the establishment is and the cycle of money, the cycle of corruption, where the elected officials and bureaucrats take your money to benefit a particular business or businesses, and then those businesses use the law firm for their legal stuff, and they also kick money back to the elected officials, them in office. That's how it works. That's how it works. And sadly, it's apparently a pretty successful model because it's all over the state. So I guess you could use that as your model if you were looking to take over a county. I would encourage you, though, to not go the corrupt route and to instead do things the right way. Sell your vision to the public. Be honest. Do the right thing. Do the right thing for the people. And you know what? At the end of the day, you may not be successful. You may not. But you'll be able to look yourself in the mirror and know that you did the right thing. You'll be able to go to bed at night when you did the right thing. And that's important. That's very important. Because if we had more of those types of folks in politics, involved in politics, we would have more of those types of folks elected and in office and calling out people who abused the system. We'd have more people, more citizens actively involved in politics. There's a large percentage of the population that doesn't vote. Now, some of those, it's because they are just completely disinterested in voting because they're ignorant. They don't care. As long as they've got their sports and their fast food, they don't care. Those people exist. Bread and circuses, man. Absolutely, they exist. But there's another segment of the population. They absolutely care. But they don't believe that the Democrats or Republicans can provide the answer they're looking for, that partisanship and corruption are more important to Democrats and Republicans as a party than our solutions. Those are the people that can make a big difference, and they're out there. They are out there. Some of them are libertarians. Some of them are independents. Some of them just don't vote. Actually, a lot of them just don't, because they don't think that the cabal, right, establishment, is ever going to let anybody else through. Nobody else is going to be allowed to get in there. That's what they think. And so they don't vote. But then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so I encourage you, if you're one of the people, one of the folks that doesn't vote because you don't think things can be changed, I implore you, at the local level, it absolutely can be. Whether that's a city council race, or if you live in a smaller county like I do, get involved in county politics, there are ways to significantly better for local government, the government most directly involved in your everyday life. There are ways to make it better. Reasonable ways. Reasonable, easy ways that don't take up a ton of time or a ton of money. It just takes being slightly involved, paying attention to what's going on. And at the local level, your voice is so much louder so much louder. We're a nation of 300 million people. So when you speak out on a federal issue, you are one voice among 300 million people. But when you go to the state level, you're one of 4.4 million people. So now your voice is, what, 90 times louder? A little less. 80 times? A little less than that. 70 times louder, whatever. Sorry, on the fly math, not always good at it. But it's 70 times louder than at the federal level. That's good. That's better. But you're still one voice among 4.4 million people. But then you go down to the county level. You go down to Jefferson County level, where that's our biggest county. You're just one voice among 800,000 people. And that's even better than being at the state level. You're still, six times louder? Go down to a metro council district, and now you're even smaller. I can't even do that math in my head right now, but it's, 20, 25,000 people per district? The state house in Kentucky is 43,000 people. So you're one among 43,000 people. The Senate's 107,000 people. So you're one voice among 107,000. And then you get to the small rural communities, especially the ones that still run on a magistrate system. Holy cow. I live in Pendleton County, as many of you know. In Pendleton County, we only have like 14,500 people. We have four magistrate districts. There's less than 4,000 people per district. You can be that loud voice, that one amongst 4,000, and go out and recruit 4 or 5 or 10 or 50 people, and all of a sudden you're a very vocal section of the community. And, of course, remember, of all these numbers I've given you, not all these people vote or are eligible to vote. Many of them are under the age of 18. So you can make a huge difference, and the lower you go in the chain, bigger difference you can make. And those are the people that with direct ability over your life, especially here in Kentucky, where we have the concept of home rule, where, in theory anyway, most decisions are supposed to be made at the county and city level, where the government is most representative of the people. Get involved locally. It's a good thing. It's the most effective thing. And it's the most likely to work. All right, so we get back, we're at the bottom of the hour. When we get back, I've got a laundry list of bills, the filed bills. We're going to get into those. Also, if you'd like to call in, you can do so by calling area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. And we'll be back here in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled, the My View Matters radio network, and we here are here every Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're catching us on podcast, all of a sudden I can't speak. If you're catching us on podcast, we do appreciate you listening to the show, but we enjoy you listening live, too, and we do have the chat room open. People can sit there and talk to one another if they so choose. I typically don't check that except during the break because it's quite distracting during the show, but obviously you're always welcome to call in as well if you want to talk about anything we're talking about. The number here is 858-683-1326. And so coming back from the break here in the final half hour, what I wanted to do was go through some of the bills that have been proposed this year so far. And I have a feeling that we're going to have a lot of bills proposed this year, and not all of them are very good. in fact, most of them are not. But anyhow, let's go through a few of them here. Two of them that have been rumored but haven't been proposed yet, seen the legislation yet. Apparently the Democrats are going to be pushing for a minimum wage increase up to $10.10 per hour. And, you know, we can get into a big, long discussion some other time on the minimum wage. But the minimum wage is not a cure for what is ailing our economy. The cure is to quit printing money and to stop regulating our small businesses out of existence. But it is something that is considered to be a fix, supposedly. I would say it's more of a Band-Aid, or if anything, it causes more problems or can cause more problems than it solves. And then, again, in the same vein, the smoking ban is going to be back. It's back every year. They've been really pushing it in the media because it's not getting any coverage. There's so many other big issues, like the minimum wage, that are going to overshadow the smoking ban. But we're always watching that because, in the end, it's completely and totally unnecessary and unnecessarily harms a number of small business owners, including the small business owners specifically for bars. Bars are really, really harmed by a smoking ban, and I have plenty of data to back that up. Anybody ever so wanted to challenge me on that. Things that have been proposed, the gambling issue is back again, and I'm really, really frustrated with this issue because as one who promotes individual liberty and believes in individual liberty, I think you have the right to spend your money any way you want, including gambling every last nickel you have away. If you're that stupid, luck. You know, I really don't believe in protecting people from themselves. And the whole reason gambling is legal is because we protect people from themselves, or try to. But the reality, you can go any state damn near around us, and you can gamble. So who cares? Who cares? If you want to gamble, you can do it. It's not like the old days where it would have taken days to go to a casino. There's casinos in Cincinnati, in Indiana. I think Illinois has two. They're all around us. West Virginia's got the Racinos. And what frustrates me is that what's being proposed, the major proposal, is to grant monopolies to the horse tracks on gambling. And I think that's a terrible thing to do on multiple levels. First of all, because you're giving them a monopoly. Monopolies are always bad. Repeat after me. Monopolies are always bad. And so creating a monopoly is insane. To intentionally create a monopoly is counterintuitive. But it's to pay off cronies. It's to pay off the horse industry. Now, I'm not against the horse industry. Not at all. But I certainly am not in favor of giving special perks to one particular industry that's suffering setbacks because the world is changing. It's to that industry to adapt to the times or die. I'm quite sure that the telegraph operators were freaked out at the telephone. But they got over it. And you certainly don't hear about the plight of the telegraph operator anymore. If you want to handle the gambling issue, and of course then the answer is no gambling, it's evil, it's wrong, you're hurting people, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I get so frustrated because people are going to gamble anyway. They're just doing it in other states, and there's money in other states. So how does that help? My perfect proposal for the gambling stuff, which the problem is there's no moneyed interests, and there's no special interest group involved in this. But the right way to do it is like we do with alcohol laws, which is let counties decide what they want or don't want in their community. We have 120 counties in this state. We have the most counties per capita of any state, and that's the purpose, and it's awesome. I don't care what anybody says. It's awesome because it means that if one county does something absolutely stupid, I can move 10 minutes away, not be in that county anymore, not have to disrupt my life, not have to switch jobs, not have to do any of that stuff. And I don't have to live under a dumb government policy. That's great. If we let our counties decide, that we have the concept of home rule, the idea that the local community should be deciding what's right or wrong. And I think that's a very good thing. It's pushing power down to the lowest levels. That's a good thing. And unfortunately, there's no money involved in that. So nobody's pushing the let counties decide, let it go to the county. Nobody's pushing that. It's not even been proposed as far as I can tell. Even legislators that I've talked to that support it won't propose it, which frustrates me to no end. Just when it comes to the gambling stuff, I would rather leave it illegal than to give a monopoly to the horse track, because there is never a time that you should write a monopoly into your constitution. Ohio did that with their casinos. It's goofy. And then one of the casinos wanted to be in a slight place. They had to pass another constitutional amendment to move it. Stupid, stupid thing to do. To hard code monopoly into your constitution. Terrible, terrible thing. And that's what these are. These gambling bills are all constitutional amendments. They would hard code monopolies for horse tracks. The absolute wrong way to go. There's a bill to lower the drinking, the blood alcohol content for considering someone drunk from 0.08 to 0.05. And this is a nationwide movement. It's House Bill 14. There are tons and tons of studies that show that the people who are blowing 0.08 and lower are not causing deaths on the highway. It's the people blowing 0.17 and 0.2, whatever. Those are the problems. That by lowering the blood alcohol limit from 0.08 to 0.05, there's tons of stories. Go out and research it. You will find all the stories that show it's not going to do anything. It feels good. Oh, we were going to try to prevent some more deaths on the highway. But it's not going to actually do anything. Not going to solve anything. 0.08 is already bad enough. 0.08, depending on your body's metabolism and your size and all that stuff, can be a couple of beers and you're legally intoxicated. It's not going to solve anything. It's feel-good legislation that will end up punishing people unnecessarily while not addressing the real issue, which are the habitual drunks who get busted over and over and over at 0.2 whatever and are actually a danger to people on the roads. And speaking of on the roads, there's a bill, House Bill 33, wants to make it illegal to dial a phone number to your cell phone when you're in a work zone or a school zone. Now, a school zone, I can understand. School zones are relatively small. They're usually a tenth of a mile or less. Whatever. Not okay with that. I mean, in a school zone, whatever. But the work zone thing bugs me. Because in Kentucky, and I'm sure you all have been in these situations, but in these work zones that last for like 25 miles, there's barrels for 25 miles in the work zone, speed limit lowered, and double the fine work zone. And then the actual workers are all working within 100 feet of each other. There's 25 miles of work zone and 100 feet of work. And then on top of it, what if you're in a work zone and somebody's actually getting hurt and you want to call and say, hey, this guy got hurt? Well, it's illegal for you to make that call. That's stupid. So it's some of this stuff is just crazy. And you know, it's not all bad. I mean, and I've only started to dig into all these laws. So, I mean, there could be even worse ones out there I haven't even found yet. One of the ones that's interesting that it intrigues me is a constitutional amendment to move the executive branch elections to a presidential year. Senate Bill 27, it's proposed by the Republicans, and of course they're trying to push it to the presidential year because Republicans do very well in the presidential years because in Kentucky, generally, we vote Republican nationally and we vote Democrat locally. And so they want to try to push this to the presidential year when all the Republicans come out and vote Republican and use that straight party ticket button. That's their goal. That's why they want to do it. Now, I know that the cost of elections is really high. It is very high. I want to say, and this is a few years back now, but Trey Grayson, back before we got rid of the gubernatorial runoff system, Trey Grayson had said that to run a runoff election, which is just another primary, would cost between $5 and $7 million. And so I have to extrapolate that that's how much it costs to run an election. So to run these elections in the odd year for the executive branch for basically six elections, seven candidates, or seven offices, rather, is costing us somewhere between $10 and $15 million. And, yeah, okay, I'm all right with moving that, but I think that it should be, if it's going to be legit, you got to move it to the non-presidential year. You got to have a little bit of separation of powers. The whole reason these things are staggered is to avoid massive clean sweeps in government. The idea, and it does sound funny thing for me, I guess, but I'm not one for – I don't want a complete radical change overnight. Radical change scares people anyway. And you don't want something where one news event, one little blip on the radar causes a panic and causes people to panic vote a massive clean sweep, just complete changeover of government. It would not be a good thing. And so – I guess my point is that if you're going to do it legitimately, you need to move it to the even year election that is the non-presidential year. And I could support it if it was that way. You have that division of powers. You're electing the executive of the state in the non-presidential year. You're voting for the executive of the country in the presidential year. It kind of makes sense. You might be able to tweak it around, maybe move some of the senators around so that there's more senators in the presidential year than the non-presidential year since you're electing the governor in the non-presidential year, whatever. The point is that keeping that separation of powers and electing people in different ways, which is what preserves those separation of powers, is a good thing, and that should be preserved. You don't want a government made up of people elected all in the same way because then you end up with a democracy. You end up with the very loud voice that comes out once every 4 years driving everything else and never giving an opportunity for the other side to be heard, never having the opportunity for different interests to be considered. Let's see here, boy. There's a handful of good amendments out there. One of the ones I'm supporting is the constitutional amendment to restore voting rights for people who were convicted of felonies, have served their time, and have completed all of their restitution. Bill 70, and also it's in Senate Bill 15. And in fact, I'm hoping next week to have someone on specifically to talk about that issue. So if you're interested in that, I encourage you to tune in next week, and we'll get some time with some folks that are going to speak specifically on that issue. And, you know, if you have a concern with it, please bring it. I mean, we want to have a good discussion about the issue. But I think that's one that deserves to be heard. And I personally, my take is, once you've done your time, once you've paid your debt to society, you've made your restitution, you should be a human being again. Unless, of course, you know, the punishment should fit the crime. So if you committed election fraud, well, I'm sorry, you don't get to vote anymore, right? I mean, that makes sense. Just like I could support, hey, you know what, if you committed a crime using a gun, you don't get your gun rights back. I mean, that kind of makes sense, right? I mean, the common sense policy should be in place there. And that's basically what this bill does. It also prevents people who have committed violent crimes or violent crimes against people from getting their voting rights back too, but whatever. People, if they're really truly violent, they should be still locked up and shouldn't be eligible to get their rights back anyway. That's kind of how I look at it. If somebody's a bad person that kills people, we shouldn't let them out of prison. Just saying. I mean, you know, if they're bad people, why are we dealing with bad people? Why are we letting bad people into society? That's not good. Another constitutional amendment, one that looks kind of promising, is the no pay for budget sessions. So the special sessions, it's House Bill 45. We've been having – so it used to be in Kentucky. We used to only have sessions even numbered years, and the purpose of that was to or the purpose of adding the extra session to the odd-numbered years, what is now known as the short session, was in order to make it so we could move the budget around and make the budget more flexible. And we have a constitutional duty. Our elected officials have a constitutional duty to pass a budget. They have a constitutional duty to do so. And they have, in recent years, consistently failed to complete their constitutional duty inside the regular session, which then forces the governor to call a special session to do what the General Assembly should have already have done. And what that means is that you and I are footing the bill to have the legislators go back to Frankfurt. We're paying them to do the job they were supposed to do to begin with, that they failed to do. Basically, we're rewarding them for failing to do their job. And so the amendment would make it so that they do not get paid for special sessions for the budget, House Bill 45. And the only thing I would add on to that is also prevent them from claiming expenses. Because make no mistake, there's a generous expense account along with every legislator. I think it should cost money. It should come out of their pocket. If they fail to do the job that they are constitutionally bound and elected to do, it should cost them money. It should be painful if they fail to do their job. It's their job. There would be to make it so that they were automatically recalled if they failed to pass it as they are constitutionally required to do. I could get behind that one, too. Let's see. There's a few more here. We're running low on time, so I'm going to knock out a couple here. House Bill 58 looks like it's there to raise the speed limit, the maximum speed limit, on four-lane highways that are not interstates or the parkways, because those interstates and parkways have already been raised. The maximum there is 70. This would raise the maximum speed limit to 65 on four-lane highways that are not interstates or parkways. And I support that generally. The Kentucky Transportation Cabinet already does studies on all this stuff anyway, and they're not going to raise everything arbitrarily 65 miles an hour. They're still going to do traffic studies. They're still going to verify that it's safe or safe enough to be doing 65 miles an hour on these highways. And as such, I think raising the artificial cap from 55 to 65 is a good thing, because it gives the transportation cabinet flexibility to set an appropriate speed limit based on traffic conditions and road conditions in that area. So that's a good one. That's good. Heck, I'd like to see the cap completely removed and just let the transportation cabinet figure it out. But in light of that, or in lieu of that, that's fine. House Bill 58, that's a good one, at least so far. I haven't read the details of that one yet, but I assume the summary is correct. One of them that I had actually heard of here through libertarian contacts, not even – I had heard this was coming from some folks in the Libertarian Party of Boone County, that Senate Bill 12 is a bill that allows EMTs and other emergency personnel to carry a drug called naloxone. Naloxone? I can't say these drugs. But basically, this is a drug that, when given, immediately stops the ability of the body to process opiates. So the idea is that in the case of a heroin overdose or other opiate overdose, that the EMTs would be able to give that the person on scene, or whether it's EMTs or the fire department or the police, whoever the emergency responder is, would be able to give that on scene rather than having to wait for the ambulance, take them to the hospital, and then give it to them. And the idea is that it could save lives. And, you know, we've talked about this on the show before. You know, people with drug problems, they have other problems. Nobody grows up to, you know, and says at 6 years old, I want to grow up to be a junkie. Something went very wrong in their life. So anything we can do to help those people, I think, is a good thing. I think giving them the opportunity to turn their life around is worthwhile. And so I very much support Senate Bill 12. I think that giving EMTs the tools to save lives, which is what their job is a good thing. Yeah, we got a few minutes left, so I'm going to one more here. There's multiple bills that have been proposed on eminent domain. And anything that we can do to curb eminent domain is a good thing. In case somebody out there doesn't know, eminent domain means that the government comes in and takes someone's private property by force. Now, this in the past has been used to do things like build highways and or to build basic infrastructure, like putting in electric lines or putting sewer or water lines. That's what eminent domain had been used for traditionally. But in recent years, eminent domain has been seriously abused around the country. And actually what got me back involved in politics in 2005 specifically was the abuse of eminent domain in the what's known as the Kelo case, where New Haven, Connecticut took a house from a family and gave the land to a private developer. They took the house and gave it to a private company in order for them to build a hotel. And the rationale behind it was, well, that property's nice, so we're going to take it, we're going to build a hotel, and that hotel is going to generate tax revenue. And therefore, it's good for the community because it's going to generate tax revenue, more so than that house did. And that was absolutely appalling to me. It is so clearly an abuse of eminent domain. Eminent domain is supposed to really be something that is absolutely critical. It has to happen on this land, and it's for real core basic infrastructure stuff. And even then, I believe it should be used extraordinarily sparingly. I would support putting something in that requires massive amounts of compensation for property taken force with eminent domain. There should be massive compensation for that because it's wrong. And to a private developer is just disgusting. And so there's fear in Kentucky that the Bluegrass Pipeline folks may try to take land in the domain because they haven't connected all the dots. They've got their little path, and they're buying right-of-way, which is the right thing to do. They're buying them, paying for them. But there's a lot of spots where they haven't connected the dots. They haven't been able to connect it all the way across. And there's a fear that they're going to try to use eminent domain to get it. Absolutely not. And I applaud the legislators that are putting in bills to specify that they will not be allowed to use eminent domain, and in fact made it so that only things governed by the Public Services Commission, which are your electric and other utilities, to even be allowed to use eminent domain. Anything we can do to make eminent domain harder is a good thing. Folks, we're about out of time here, but the session is just getting started. We've got a lot that's going to be pushed. We'll be working with our partners out there in the Liberty community to keep you informed on what's being pushed, what's moving forward, what we need to call Frankfurt about and yell about, what we need to stop, what we need to keep pushing. And I thank you for tuning in. Again, you know, if you are listening to this on podcast, great. Tell your friends if you're listening to it live. Tell your friends to catch this show or others on podcast. They're all archived. And until next week, folks, have a good week. Tune in again next week at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for another edition of Liberty Unbridled. And listen to the other shows on the network Monday through Thursday as well. This has been Liberty Unbridled on the MyView Matters Radio Network.